It's time for the Taking Notes Podcast with Julian Robichaud and Bruce Elgort.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 53 of the Taking Notes Podcast for Friday, February 9th, 2007. My name is Bruce Elgort, and I am here with
Julian Robichaud.
Julian, are you recovering from Lotus Fear like I am still?
I finally caught up on my sleep. Bruce, I got back from Lotus Fear on, flew back on Thursday night, and I think I slept on Friday until like almost 11 o'clock.
I was a zombie for days on days. You know, I came back with just tons of, granted we all got the warm fuzzy feeling, about all the great stuff, that they're working on, and actually some of the stuff we talk about in this podcast with Thomas Gums. We'll get to that in a little while. But, it was all good stuff, It wasn't, they didn't mention workplace. They didn't, SOA was only mentioned once, right, in the opening general session. Not that I don't mind SOA, it's a great thing. But it was just intense.
There is a lot of stuff to absorb.
All right, so this evening we had the opportunity to speak to Thomas Gums, who is, what's his title, Julian? You got it handy there? Hold on, I have it right here.
Hold on.
I have it.
What is it?
I have it.
And open the envelope.
The envelope is Thomas Gums, Advisory Software Engineer, IBM. So that's not too long of a title. But
no,
Julian, what did we talk about with Thomas? It's a long podcast. Bear with it; it's great stuff. So
we talked about all sorts of stuff, and in fact, do we know yet if we're going to split this into two podcasts or just leave it as one?
Let's leave it as one.
Yeah.
We don't know, but we're going to leave it as one.
Yeah. So. Well, and definitely read the show notes to see some of the things that we hit on. We talked about Domino Administrator Client. We talked about the Notes Client piece. We talked about the Web Client piece. We talked about some of the JavaScript libraries that are involved with all of that stuff. We talked about DDM, one of my favorite databases, and not only what it does, but also like what Andy Broyles just wrote about in terms of kind of hacking through that database and looking at some of the interesting things that I guess the interesting ways that it works. We talked about
the Eclipse update server.
Eclipse update, yeah. Thomas did the whole session at Lotusphere about Eclipse update servers, which I'm telling you, you look at that and you're like, well, Eclipse update server, yeah, whatever, that's Eclipse, I don't care. But you got, if nothing else, hang on till the end of the podcast for that part.
Right.
So, skip forward however many minutes that is, like maybe two-thirds of the way through, and we start talking about that. And the more Thomas starts talking about it, the more you start thinking, oh my gosh, Eclipse, I can use that. Mm-hmm. And, Eclipse update site, you can use that for the Notes 8 clients coming up. You can use it for same time 7.5 right now.
Right.
There's going to be a template that ships with Notes 8, so whenever that comes out in beta, we might be able to see it. That you can actually run on a Note 7 server. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like a topic that you would just think, Eclipse update, whatever. But I'm telling you, listen to the stuff towards the end, and it might spark some really interesting ideas.
Yeah, and a lot of the material that Thomas talks about at the end regarding the Eclipse stuff, Thomas covered in his session at Lotusphere 2007, ID 211, turning your IBM Lotus Domino server into the ultimate Eclipse update site server. So take a listen. We hope you enjoy. And anything else, Mr. Robichaud, for 53?
No, let's let him listen.
All right, here we go.
Okay, here we are. We're talking to Thomas Gums. Hello, Thomas.
Hey, Julian. Thanks for having me.
Oh, sure. Hey, I know Bruce has been trying to get you on the show for something like 4 years. So, all right, well, we got a lot of stuff to cover here. Let's just start from the very beginning. Thomas, how did you get started with Lotus Notes?
Oh, wow. Well, basically, in July 1991, way back when, I got hired by Lotus in Munich, Germany, initially to work in the technical support group, and I started with the beta version of Notes version 2. And I was the second person in the entire Lotus building there who actually knew about Notes. The first one was the Domino administrator, or Notes administrator at the time. And that they hired me essentially because I had some network skills in the PC LAN and Token Ring and OS2. And most of the products they had at the time didn't have anything to do with networks. It was like, you know, Lotus 1-2-3, etc. So they wanted to have someone with like network skills. And well, I took the job and I built up essentially with another person called Ralph Seidman, which some of you probably know, the internal support team, and ended up not only administering the internal node servers we also used for internal mail and, you know, database replication, but I also built what's now known as the Nodes Knowledge Base, like a previous version of that, because when we started to work on node support, we didn't do this on the phone. We actually told all our customers to do it using our internal call tracking database. So all the questions we got from all the customers, we actually put in a question answer type format and stored them in the database. So for all the other Nodes product support people, they had a repository to look into and see if this was already a known issue. And that eventually, over the years, got cleaned up and was turned into the knowledge base database.
Nice. And that turned into Domino Administrator.
Poof.
No. Not quite. No, that's a little bit different.
Well, talking about Domino Administrator, Thomas is the I don't want to say, is it correct to say the father of the Domino Administrator client? Or, I mean, when did the Domino Administrator client, you know, break out on its own? When did it, you know, morph into this thing that was part of the core Notes? Was it part of the core Notes client in the beginning, Thomas?
In release 4.6, most of the admin features were part of the core Notes client, and they were hanging off essentially a big dialog box somewhere under the files, what is it called? Files tools menu. And we changed it because of essentially two reasons. The customers complained that every Notes client they had all these like administrative type features in there, and they didn't really want their users to see them and mess around with them. And additionally, with you know, the server and the Notes feature set increasing, we also needed new tools to manage and administer those features. So we didn't really want to feel like we should stuff all these like new things into that existing limited dialog box panel. So we decided to create a new standalone administrator client, which is essentially the same what the designer team did. They started their Domino Designer client at the same time frame.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what was it like, you know, designing that first? Obviously, you designed this from the ground up, right?
Yes. The way we actually did it is, well, we had lots of talks and meetings, obviously.
Yeah.
But I essentially designed it in R5 in Visual Basic. And what that means is I essentially wrote a halfway functioning prototype which had all the tabs, the panels, the tree controls, everything essentially working with fake data. So it wouldn't, of course, connect to a real Domino server.
Mm-hmm.
But it had a local set of data to visualize and simulate on what you would see when you click on certain things. Just to give you an idea, actually, I pulled out some numbers. I had, at the time, 356 megabyte just for graphic source files like Photoshop drawings and mock-ups,
mm-hmm.
And 220 megabyte of Visual Basic code. So that's throwaway code. We never shipped it, obviously. It was just to demonstrate internally to, you know, focus groups and the developers and how things actually should look like when we, you know, implement it in C. But it was a lot of time and work at the time to actually get this thing designed and built.
Mm-hmm. So Thomas, how has the administrator client, you know, changed from R5 to what we see now in R7 and soon in Domino 8?
Well, it hasn't really changed much because when we designed it from the ground up for release 5, we basically just did incremental improvements between, you know, R5 and R6, and then added some more features in 6.5 and, you know, more in release 7. So, which is basically a sort of a testament that the original design pretty much held up until, you know, today. And still, the administrator client for release 8 will still be the same client, just with additional features.
Right. And I just remember, I have this image in my head of the first Domino administrator for the web. Do you remember that?
Yes. We had the first web admin client in release 4.6, and it was just like a big collection of frames to give it a certain look and feel, but it wasn't really that functional initially. It had a live console, and you could scan the log file for certain keywords like errors and warnings and so on. So we essentially ended up redesigning and rewriting it from scratch for release 6. In release 5, I didn't have time because I had to work on the original design of the Windows admin client. But once we shipped that, I redesigned and rewrote together with Wolfgang Schramm from IBM Switzerland the web admin client from scratch for release 6.
Wow, and then from 6 to 7, did you do another rewrite?
Yes, we did, actually. And, and the reason for that was that initially the release 6 admin client was supposed to be running on Internet Explorer and Netscape release 4. And if you ever did web development for Netscape 4, you knew that you were in for a lot of trouble. Because Netscape 4 had a lot of issues with like standard DOM support and standards in general. So the code base was very split, essentially, between IE-specific code and Netscape 4-specific code. And we also had to support Netscape 4, not only on Windows, but also on the Mac and on Unix platforms. So that put, actually, a lot of effort on the development team, because to get something up working, let's say, on a Solaris Netscape 4, you know, just made it even more difficult to get all these things running, and the goal was to have the same user interface experience like you had with the Windows admin client, like the tree controls, the tabs, everything. Mm-hmm. So it was a big effort at the time.
Yeah, something just came to mind. You know, wasn't the work that you guys did on the like the web administrator client kind of like bleeding edge at the time?
Well, I'm glad you think so. Certainly, it felt like this because if you look at things like Ajax, the term Ajax was actually coined in 2005. And when we started to work on release 6 for the web administrator, release 6 shipped in 2002. And we started actually working on that code in 2001, in that time frame. So at the time, we already did a lot of stuff what people try to do today. Of course, they use different technology. They use, you know, the Ajax frameworks for this, but we didn't have any framework. We had to write all these things from scratch ourselves. So yes, it was a ton of work, but we had a ton of fun as well.
Well, and you know, besides being a coder, you actually have to do a lot with the look and feel of the products too. So, you know, are you one of these sort of pixel tweaker kinds of guys? Do you actually sit there and kind of sweat over the interfaces and have to get everything perfect, or do you just kind of write the code and then hand off the design to someone else?
No, actually, so it's kind of funny because I did the design and the initial prototypes for the Release 5 Windows Administrator client. So I didn't do any of the actual development or coding, I just did the design. But I wrote all the prototype code for it. And what's funny is that the code I actually wrote, which is part of the shipping product, is either in templates, such as the Web Administrator template, or the actual server code, even though I'm a product designer. I know it sounds a little bit confusing, but...
Okay, so between the admin client on the Note side and the web client that you can do almost all of the same things in just straight through the web. What's your favorite feature on there? Since you've had to work with this for so many iterations, what's the thing that you look at that you just think, that's just really cool?
I don't really have a particular favorite feature because, I worked on the entire client in terms of the design. But if I had to choose between the web administrator client or the Windows admin client, I'd pick the web admin client, not only because I designed it, but also I implemented it. So it's a little bit more of a, baby than the Windows client. Now, my favorite feature in the web admin client is actually the feature that allows you to stop native OS processes and Windows services or start them. And I give you an example. Carl Tyler from Instant Technologies actually once told me that he used WebAdmin to connect to his Domino server, used WebAdmin to start the VNC Windows service on his box, so he could get back to the system using his VNC viewer. So that was a great example, on how useful this feature really is. Mm-hmm. And I wish we had it in the Windows client too. It was very easy to do in the web administrator client, so the decision essentially was, should we not do it, or should we just leave it in because it has some value only in the web context, and we decided we just leave it in because there's some value.
That's also true with the notes.ini editability, right?
Yes, that's another one.
It's in the web, but not on the notes on the Windows client. So,
correct.
Huh. So really, you can do like a net start and a net stop from the web client? Really?
Uh-oh. But you get a user interface for it, so you see the list. Essentially, it looks like the Windows UI when you see all the tasks, the services running in your system, and you can stop, you can pause them. You can select
multiple. I have to try that out.
Uh-oh, here comes super geek developer playing with the admin client. Watch out, people.
Well, after this interview is over, I think we're going to have to go offline, and you're going to have to tell me how to do the live server console from my notes client. I want to find out how to do that. But we won't record that, will we? No. All right. Well, I guess that kind of leads up to the next subject, though. We've talked a little bit before about sort of hacking the admin client or the NTFs and the web admin piece and things like that. What are do you know of any really cool bits of code or things that you can do that if you really dig into the templates or the web piece, just something that people would sort of find?
Well, it's actually a good idea for people who use Notes and Domino and to actually dig into the templates and try to reverse engineer them, because there are a lot of hidden gems in those templates. So for example, the Windows administrator client is driven by a template called the domadmin.ntf template. It contains all the welcome screens and the known server tasks, which you can monitor and start and stop using the UI in the admin client. And it defines, for example, if a certain server admin task accepts tell commands. So all these things are defined in forms which are stored in the domadmin template. So if you are, for example, a third-party vendor and you sell a product, let's say, which implements another third-party server admin task, you can create also a form which describes your task, whether it accepts tell commands, implement the UI for it, and then ship that form so customers can put it in their existing domadmin NSF database. And then the tasks you ship then can be monitored, it can be controlled using the UI from the admin client, and so on and so forth.
Oh, nice.
Now, for the web admin template, which is in webadmin.ntf, there's much more interesting stuff, because essentially the entire web admin client is built in that template. So it's tons of JavaScript and tons of Lotus Script code. So nothing is hidden. And for example, there's a class in there called OS File System, which implements essentially an abstraction layer to access the entire file system using Lotus Script. So you get collections of folder objects, you get the files inside a folder, you can figure out whether a folder is a folder or a directory link, if there are access control list files, all these things.
Yeah, you know, I think maybe Nathan Freeman or someone told me about all the great JavaScript code that's in there. You did mention your thing about the file system stuff. What other kind of cool code is in there, Thomas, that people like me would be interested in?
Oh, man, that's a really difficult question. I mean, there's tons of code in there. I can't think of a specific example which might be useful. One of the issues is that all these classes are in there. They're all sort of interrelated, so it's not easy to just pull them out in a standalone fashion and just drop them into a different, template, because they use, you know, other common classes, and those common classes they use other resource classes which store the strings. So you'd have to do a little bit diving into that code and figure out, you know, how to break those dependencies. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's a good learning experience.
Yeah, I think that's probably what Nathan was trying to tell me. You know, go look at the code in the web admin, you know, and it can be truly beneficial. So,
well, one thing we try to do in release 7 is to break apart the code and differentiate between the core implementation and the UI widgets, because the web admin, you know, as you probably have seen, implements the same UI as the Windows client, so they have all these like dialog boxes and tabs and views and tree controls. And all these components, you know, and date pickers and calendar controls and so on. And what we wanted to is separate them from the core web admin template and put them in their own database. So if you look on a Domino 7 server, you find a database called DFC100.nsf. Mm-hmm. And DFC stands for DOM Foundation Classes. So the idea was to have something similar to the MFC, you know, for Windows development, where a lot of stuff is already taken care of for you and you just call it. Again, that was way before any of the AJAX frameworks surfaced. It was around actually 2002 when we started on the DFC implementation. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we didn't have a lot of time documentation to make this really open and callable for everyone, so it's currently only used from web admin. Mm-hmm.
And I think you did a session, what, two Lotuspheres ago with Wolfgang?
Yes.
If I can dig that up, I will put it in the show notes, because it was a great presentation and it explained in detail how you guys did all that stuff. So let's move on to DDM, Julian.
Ah, DDM. I love DDM.
Me too.
Give us the quick 2-minute DDM history then. Where did that come from? Did that just sort of spring out of your head one day?
Domino domain. Want to define monitor. It first? Monitor.
Domino domain monitor. It was actually a team effort of the entire server and administration team. We came together. We had long design phases, and talked about what DDM should really do. And we said, we have all this data, like we have it in log files, we have stat rep, we have statistics, but there got to be a better way to quickly get a grip on the health of your server. And then not only see what's going on with the server, but then also have corrective actions to do something about them. And not only do it on a per server basis, but have it for a hierarchy of servers, so you can have these server collection hierarchies, where you basically can roll up all the data from all your servers to certain nodes all the way up to one central spot, which you can actually then access. So we spent a lot of time designing different types of probes which would run, how they would get configured, and then how the data would get surfaced and displayed for administrators to act upon. And DDM is really two pieces. It's the configuration side, which is in events 4, .ntf, and the data presentation and aggregation side, which is in ddm.ntf. So Scholar Keefe did all the configuration side implementation in Events 4, and I did the UI design and the implementation of the DDM template. Mm-hmm.
And someone just blogged, I forgot who it was, just blogged where they tore your UI, your tab UI design out, and kind of explained how you did it, I think, right?
Yes.
I forgot who that was. We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, Andy Broyles, I think.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Great write-up.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, that was where I found out how to do rounded corners on tables, I think, from the DDM database. So there's good stuff in there.
Yeah, we try to push the envelope once in a while.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that rounded tables thing, because I think I remember chatting with Thomas years ago, and he tuned me in, he clued me into that same, you know, use this feature in table design, you know, with the image stuff, and you can do rounded corners, so...
Right, we needed this for some yellow sticky type thing.
Yeah, that's in the OpenNTF mail template, but yeah, yes. That's right, but I never got it to work correctly. So, all right, continuing on the topic of DDM, got any cool hacks in that database, Thomas?
Well, let's talk about two. There are actually two interesting techniques which we use in there. The first one is to subclass UI events. Things like post open and query close outside of the actual view code. So what we did is like we wrote a little script library and essentially subclassed those events from the view object in the script library, so we don't have to go into the actual views to change the code if they wanted to. And if you have a lot of views, which we do in DDM, we would have to change all these views individually. So instead, we just bound those events to our script library and deal with it there in one central spot. And an example of that is the tabbed views you actually see when you open the DDM database. You're not seeing embedded views in a tabbed table. You see real views in a single frame. And when you switch those tabs, different views get loaded. And that's what Andy Broyles actually... dissected and wrote up about, and on how that stuff actually works and how it's implemented. So I suggest everyone to check out his blog and actually read it, because he did a great job of actually writing all that stuff down. The second thing which is sort of interesting is that we control a lot of the form UI by programmatically driven tabbed tables. And that's what some people call progressive disclosure of data. So we have all these tab tables, and depending on the data, you show a certain tab or row of that table. So when you open a DDM document, depending on the data in the document, the data you're gonna see is very different, but it's all the same form. So for example, if there's an event where we have corrective actions available for, or a description, you actually see the description and you see the corrective actions. If we don't, we show either nothing or we show some generic help which says, well, there's no, you know, corrective action available. And all that stuff is dynamic based on data. So if you open that form in the designer client, you'll actually see a ton of tab tables, and those are all driven programmatically by LotusScript code from the back end at the document open time.
Hmm.
It's a little bit different technique than what you usually do when you design Notes forms, I guess.
But now we'll all be doing that.
it really depends. You know, it's not always a good idea to do it for everything you do. But it's interesting to technique to know about, and if you have some requirements, you can actually apply it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I you know, interface is always just a struggle for me, so anytime I can get some kind of examples like that of stuff that works, then, you know, I try to use it over and over. Okay, so let's switch gears real quick, because I know that one of the things that we definitely want to talk about and get some good time in here on the podcast is the session that you did at Lotusphere a couple weeks ago. You did a session on a new feature in Domino 8 that deals with Domino as an Eclipse update server, and I have to admit, I really kind of barely know even what that means. So can you tell me and everyone else what that even is?
Sure. An Eclipse update site contains features and plugins you provision onto a Eclipse-based client. There are a couple of different clients, such as the Eclipse IDE itself. Nodes 8 is essentially Eclipse-based, and same time 7.5. So all the features you actually develop for such a platform or client, you actually put them in an Eclipse update site, and then you point that client to the site, and it provisions the features onto itself from that site. That's essentially what an update set does. It contains features and plugins. And the Eclipse platform has a thing called the Update Manager, and it knows how to grab and query those update sites and pull features and plugins from such update sites.
All right, so now let's talk a little bit about Domino 8. Thomas, can you tell us what's coming in Domino 8, and specifically in regards to the Eclipse stuff?
Yes, in Domino 8 we'll have a new feature called the Eclipse Update Site Database, which essentially turns your Domino 8 server into an Eclipse Update Site server.
Eclipse Update. So what does that mean for me? What is?
You got to remember, he's a developer.
Yeah, I see. I'm not an administrator guy. What is the Eclipse Update Site feature good for?
What it's good for is you provision Eclipse-based clients like Nodes 8, same time 7.5, or even Eclipse itself with new features and plugins. All these clients get extended. You add functionality by virtue of writing these new features, and essentially you write plugins, but you wrap them into a feature. And then you store these features and plugins in a thing called an Eclipse update site. And then you point those clients, such as Nodes 8, same time 7.5, or Eclipse, to an Eclipse update site. And then it sees these new features and downloads them from there and installs them. And next time you start the client, you have these new features installed.
Would something like that also be tied into the policy system, Thomas?
Yes, the policies and the server configuration document will have some control for administrators to specify what type of update sites users can actually query, whether they should be allowed to query external update sites or only internal update sites, and so on.
Mm-hmm. Would some of that also... say there's a new feature, right, that you want to push out. Say it's a composite application. Would that be considered a feature?
A composite application is made up of composite application data and plugins and features.
Okay. So how would Bruce, the administrator, push out this new CRM subsystem? CRM subsystem. CRM package that he wants to push out to his clients. How would that work?
You would essentially, talking about specifically about the Eclipse update site, you would import the plugins and features as provided to you into the Eclipse update site database, and then point your clients to the Domino server hosting that Eclipse update site database, and then they'll download it right from there.
Mm-hmm. And these are Eclipse plugins, right, Thomas?
Well, they're called Eclipse plugins, but they're really, they're essentially basically, you know, it's Java code stored in a certain way in jar files so that, you know, the Eclipse platform can deal with them.
So this is like...
So essentially, all the code you write is really the plugin code. And then you wrap those multiple plugins into one or more features. And the features are essentially descriptions of, you know, what makes a feature up, that this and that plugin and this and this version, and then you bundle all these things together and put them in an update site, and then clients can get them and install them from there.
Okay, so this is like when I have Eclipse open and I'm just, you know, doing some Java programming, and I say, oh, you know, I need to get the latest Callisto updates, or I need to grab the web toolkit or something like that. That's this kind of updates, right?
Exactly.
Oh, and you can do that on a Domino's server.
Yes. So okay. Usually the way people do it right now is they put it on a file system, means you have a file called site.xml, which describes the structure of two other directories called a plugins and a features subdirectory, and you put all your jar files into those two folders or subdirectories. And it's a little bit difficult to maintain such sites if they become really big. And with Domino-based implementation, you have actually a couple of advantages. The first one is you don't even have to run HTTP, because the Node's 8 client can use NRPC to talk to an Eclipse update site if it's hosted on Domino. And that's a requirement for a lot of companies. They just don't want to run an HTTP server. So we said, like, you don't have to do this. You can use plain NRPC the way you always did.
Mm-hmm. Now, but NRPC is like the port 1352 notes,
yes.
RPC?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. That doesn't work for other Eclipse-based clients, such as Sametime 7.5. Sametime and Eclipse, they can only use HTTP, but Node 8 specifically can provision composite applications, the plugins and features for those composite applications using NRPC.
Right.
If it's talking to a Domino 8 server.
Right. What about a Node 7 server? I think in your presentation, didn't you say that a Node 7 server can do provisioning over HTTP?
Correct.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
So that means the template is actually server independent. You could take you can make a replica of the update site on a release 7, even on a release 6 server, thinking about it,
mm-hmm.
and just point them to those servers and access them using HTTP.
Mm-hmm. So essentially, you're loading all the stuff into a notes database, right?
Yes.
And there's nothing written out to the file system, HTTP, and whatever mechanisms, you know, that are on that protocol stack know how to intercept those requests, you know, for the Eclipse stuff and process them, and the Domino server can spit back the necessary response, right?
Exactly. And what's cool about that approach is you can do all the things you know you have available at your disposal, such as access control lists. So you can set up multiple Eclipse update site databases and give, you know, one update site to everyone, and, you know, another update site, you know, lock down the access control list and only give it to a few users. Like, for example, if you test, like, new versions of your plugins and you only give that out to, you know, beta testers within your company. You can go even further and use reader fields on some of those feature documents and say this feature in this update site can only be seen by these people. And generally, it's much easier to deal with a database where you have documents and data on those documents and you can sort them in views than just having to look at a bunch of jar files sitting on a file system.
Mm-hmm.
So when you import all these plugins and features into an Eclipse update site database, you actually see the name of the feature, you see the plugins, the versions, you see the relationships of how many plugins a certain feature uses, because they're doc links to every plugin used by a feature. So you get nice formatted tables of all these things. You see the license agreement for certain plugins. There are tools in the database to, for example, update embedded URL references in features. Because when you write a feature as an Eclipse developer, you put a link in there pointing back to your own update site for the client, where it can find updates to that feature you wrote.
Right.
So it's sort of like... Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, so if I was a Node's business partner who wrote, you know, an application, I can have something in that application that'll point to my update server where customers can get updates from?
Exactly. But there might be an administrator who doesn't want that every client in the company now periodically goes through the firewall and hits your site to look for updates, because to some people this is a scary thing when, you know, people go out and just download binary code you know, from outside servers. So with the domino-based Eclipse update site, you can actually redirect those URLs to your internal domino server. So technically, you know, we open the jar file, extract the XML files, modify them, update the URL, stuff all that stuff back in the jar file, reattach it to the documents, and you don't even know what's going on. It just happens automatically for you.
So, and I bet you can actually disable clients from actually going out and pulling update servers as well, too, right, via like a config doc?
Yes, that or a policy document.
What didn't you guys put in there?
well, you know, the other
still lots of stuff to do. But.
Well, you know, one of the other great things about this is, let's say I'm in some, you know, big worldwide corporation, and I've got, you know, I've got my clients just spread out across all these different continents and across all these different network links. You can replicate your update database across all of your servers, right? So
yes.
Everyone can always get their updates locally.
Yep. We have a thing called replication. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and again, that's the great thing about having it in a database instead of the file system, like you were saying, because then you just kind of push everything out to these to the local servers. That's cool. Now, and also now, we're just talking about kind of plugins right now. You know, kind of moving forward. How does this affect sort of, you know, just general client updates? Is this something that's going to kind of merge into the way that Notes clients can, you know, you can push out the updates like right now to the regular Notes clients? Is that going to kind of merge back into this too?
We'll give administrators the option on doing this. So currently, we have a feature called a smart upgrade.
That's it, yeah.
Right, so you can attach a whole new kit. Let's say you currently have release 7 and 7.01 comes out, so you attach 7.01, you configure policy, and people get it from the smart upgrade database. Now, in release 8, you can't really upgrade a release 7 client to release 8 using an Eclipse update site, because release 7 doesn't know yet about Eclipse. It's only in release 8, right? So you would still use the smart upgrade database to upgrade all your release 6 and 7 clients to release 8. But once release 8 is deployed and it's based on the Eclipse framework, you can then use either the smart upgrade database as you always did, or try the new Eclipse update site to provision, let's say, release 8.01 to release 8 base client, because the 8.01 is essentially just updates to plugins and features.
Is your head spinning, Julian?
That's a neat new way of doing stuff. And see, I'm not an administrator, so I'll never get to do that, but I know I'll be bugging my administrators to do it. Because I'll just want to see it done.
Here's another cool thing you can do. If you're an Eclipse developer, you write all these cool features and plugins. Let's say you say, hey, I'd like to add this new cool feature to my Sametime 7.5 client. So you write this feature in this plugin, and then you basically just put them in the database, you host the database in the Domino server, and you tell all the people, hey, point to my Domino server and provision all these things right off your Domino server, instead of having to deal with the file system. And that's great for ISVs. You know, some people actually make money by writing such plugins and features. Like, I've seen a ton of business partners actually in the product showcase in Lotusphere, which added, you know, live video stream plugins to Sametime and all these other cool things. And they currently all distribute these plugins using the old-fashioned way. Now they could actually ship you a Notes database, which is essentially a small version of the Eclipse update site. So the database would be based on the new update site template. They import the features ready to go into the database and just ship you that one database. And then you as an administrator can import from that small update site database into your corporate update site database.
Ah, that's cool.
They're all you know, tools built into the template itself to do all these things. So you can, you know, import from the file system, you can import from another Notes database, etc.
Well, and you said this works on Note 7. So someone like Carl Tyler, if he's, you know, going and pushing out Sametime 7.5 client somewhere and he writes his plugin, he can do this right now, right?
Yes.
Are you listening, Carl?
We need to make sure he knows.
I'm sure he is. All right.
Now, obviously, you need to get your hands on Notes 8 to get the template to begin with, because we don't ship this with Release 7. It's first available in the next beta version for Notes 8.
Right, and we were told at Lotus Fear that we'd see a public beta of Notes 8 in February. So, woohoo!
We'll see.
All right, we covered a lot of material. Thanks, everyone, for sticking with us. Thomas, it's like an honor to speak to someone, of your knowledge and wisdom regarding all the stuff you've done at Lotus. It's, thank you. You've made my life much easier.
Thanks for having me, Bruce.
And Julian?
This was a great interview. I feel like we actually had to run through some things pretty quickly, so maybe we're just going to have to either all stay on the phone or come back and do a part two sometime. Mm-hmm.
And we do appreciate the noises in the background, Thomas. We'll call it Notes in the City.
Okay.
No, I wish I were in New York City. So, all right. Anything else, Mr. Robot Show, for episode 53 of the podcast?
Nope. Nothing more from me.
All right, Thomas, get back to coding.
I will. Thanks, Bruce.
Take care.
Thank you.